You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Kia tau te rangi marie, o rangi nui e tui honei, o papu tuanuku e takatonei, o te tai o e awhinei I a tātou, tihei Māori ora. This is The Green Desk on 95BFM.
As doubt around the use of 1080 has flared up in the public sphere and in headlines, we thought it was time for the Green Desk to address the issue. My producer Jack Marshall has the story.
Science, the government, and environmental groups not only defend the use of 1080, but are its advocates. This begs the question, why is doubt resurfacing now? I have a man of science, a strategic committee member for Predator Free New Zealand, as well as a committee member for many other environmental protection groups, I have Dr. James Russell in the studio. Firstly, I wanted to know, how have you felt watching this conversation play out in the media?
It's been really fascinating for me because, like you said, I was trained as a classical scientist looking for truth and finding facts, and so I have PhDs in biology and statistics. Those were from the University of Auckland in the 2000s, and I got really frustrated. I was overseas towards the end of that decade, and that was when we had that big first flare-up on 1080 and the Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment, and I was frustrated that there weren't people speaking up as loudly as they could be about the science around 1080. But since I've returned to New Zealand, I've come to realise that the science is only taking us so far, or the understanding of that science. And although we might recurrently have the debate about the science and the facts, there has to be something more underlying going on there that's driving this at many levels even. And so I've thrown myself into this this world of social science and philosophy. And it's been fascinating for me, again, for somebody that came from this pure science background, to understand how perhaps there's a lot more going on than meets the eye here.
How has the media done? Do you think the media has done a good job in New Zealand of covering it from a science perspective?
Yes, it's been really quite good, I think, to see how the media, initially, like us as scientists and those in the conservation lobby, they latched into this as a science debate and why aren't people getting the facts. But over the past decade, we've seen that as so much has gone on in the world around us, particularly so today in this world of post-truth and fake news, that there's more going on than just science facts here. And so we're seeing some really exciting journalism coming out, things such as Dave Hansford, who wrote the book on anti-1080 sentiment and got into it, and then realised that actually the really good journalism now is realising that simply dragging out another scientist to talk about the facts isn't always going to be the circuit breaker we need to move beyond this recurrent debate. So there has to be something else going on there, and I'm seeing some really good journalism now that's digging deeper into the kind of social issues that are underlying 1080 resistance, the wider world of values that are as equally important as the facts.
Yeah, because it's not up for scientific debate, it's more social understanding. Because it's funny, when I think of these activists, the way I kind of see them is almost in these negative ways, almost ignorant, and you hear these stories of violence, but in fact these activists are just devout environmentalists, and there's a lot of common ground there between the major environmental groups and these 1080 activists. But we're just not on the same page. How are you kind of approaching that?
Exactly. We're too often we're talking about different things, and to simply have scientists presenting more facts isn't really the problem. I don't think it's fair to think that the people that are against 1080 are immune to facts. I'm sure they adopt science and lots of other aspects of their lives. It's just for some reason they're not so open-minded to the science that goes on here. So I was reflecting on that, and I think there are many other issues like this where the science says something that's against what our moral compass or our personal interests might be. So for example, the science says we should fluoridate the water, but personal interests might say I don't want the water fluoridated. Or a more extreme example, I thought, might be we know we shouldn't be driving cars because of their CO2 emissions, and if the government put down a ban on driving cars, we'd probably all be up in arms as an impingement on us. And so I think it's not that these people that are against 1080 aren't listening to the facts or immune to science, it's just that they've got personal interests or different values aligned to things such as the use of toxins or the preservation of life or the ability to hunt deer and pigs, which means that, we're having a very different argument where we're just too often talking at odds over each other, and that's now splintered, and for the last 10 years it's just been too polarized, and the groups can't come together and find compromise and opportunities to go forward.
Unlike the youth use of 1080. Is it being used today, because it's quite an old method of poison, but is it being used the same way today as it was in the past? Has the content of the poison changed?
No, so the poison is still fundamentally the same toxin, but we've been developing the science, and we will always continue to do the science. So we spoke earlier about how the science is largely done, and that is true to an extent. I think all the science is on the table, and the debates and the issues now are post-science debates and issues about values. But we still need to continue doing science to refine the tool. We always need to be making sure we're pushing forward and not just stagnating with our science. But the science for 1080, initially decades ago, we were sowing it at many higher kilograms per hectare, putting a lot more of it than it turns out we needed to, because we can be quite precise now. We've got GPS technology, allows us to do precision placement, and so we've seen a reduction of at least tenfold from sowing rates of 20 kilos per hectare across the forest to now less than 2 kilos per hectare in just very thin lines. You'd be hard pressed, I think, to actually walk through the forest after a 1080 drop and collect more than a handful of pellets, because they're just so hidden and dispersed among the forest. So we've been doing a lot of that development, and as well as 1080, which is still the only tool we have, which is the cost-efficient, most optimal one. We've got many other tools which we're continuing to develop, and we hope to roll out in the future to make our toolbox for pest control more diverse.
So going forward, we're seeing a lot of still backlash, you know, flaring up of Department of Conservation workers being threatened with physical violence. How do we go forward from here? Do you feel like, from your perspective anyway, and the kind of government conservation role?
I think for the use of 1080, and it's really just a general representation of the, I think, the public's feeling against toxin, we need to look at addressing the underlying values. What is it that people hold dear to them? Is it that no poison, no matter how small an amount, ends up in a waterway? Or is it that they want to be sure that they can still hunt species like deer and pigs? Or is it that they want to make sure no birds are hurt? We need to work with them and ultimately compromise, because there's no win-win solution here, I don't think. We have to recognize that 1080 will have to continue to be used in a lot of places, but there are other places where it might not have to be. So that I think is a kind of co-design and co-management, where we make sure it's really well planned out with people, and we don't see things like just at the 11th hour a court injunction put up, which derails a lot of investment that had already been put into that Hanua's pest control program. But Dave Hansford, the journalist that's done the most work in New Zealand on 1080, has a really interesting hypothesis, and I think there's something to it. And he thinks that 1080 is really just the flashpoint, or the straw that broke the camel's back for an oppressed New Zealand rural community that's just suffered greatly under neoliberalism. And I know that sounds like drawing a long bow to go from anti-1080 use to the effects of neoliberalism, but you do see these communities that have really suffered and declined and dwindled, and they feel the government's abandoned them. And the only representation we see of the government in those rural regions is the Department of Conservation. So I think in that regards, it's not so much that 1080 is the issue, it's just the one that brought them together to be mobilized under a frustration against what's happened to them. And so I think that's something we have to consider going forward when looking at really what's going on in the rural communities, because funnily enough, it's not actually DOC that uses the most 1080, it's farmers that use it for controlling possums for our dairy industry. And so if you were fundamentally against 1080, you'd be against the farmers using it in rural areas. But it's a very specific case, it's people against it being used on DOC land, which public have access to. So it's depacking it and unpacking the issue and trying to work out what's actually going on there.
That was The Green Desk on 95 BFM. Tihe Modi Ora.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.